ever get that feeling. Like, choosing the right software settings is, like, basically a total crapshoot. One minute, your device is, you know, running super smooth, and then the next minute, it's like, ready to explode.
Today, we are diving deep into the world of software performance prediction.
It's wide.
It is way more unpredictable than anyone would think.
Yeah, it's true. We kind of just expect software to work, but honestly, behind the scenes, it's this constant battle, like trying to get good performance, but also make it efficient, trying to add features, but also keep everything stable.
Right.
And a huge part of all that is just uncertainty. It really is. It's like trying to predict the weather, but like for your apps. So we've got this super interesting research paper here by, let's see, Dorn, Apel, and Siegmund. They've built this system and they call it P4. So get this P4 system. It doesn't just try to predict, you know, how the software is going to perform,
right?
But it also tells you how confident it is in its prediction.
Yeah, it's like a weather app, but instead of just saying sunny, it's like, okay, 80% chance of sunshine, but you might want to bring an umbrella just in case.
Okay, I like where this is going, but I think maybe for some of our listeners, let's back up a second. There's this figure in their paper, figure one, and it really jumped out at me. It basically shows all these different models, right? And they're all trying to predict how the same software is going to perform. And the thing is, the results are just all over the place.
Yeah, and that's exactly the point. Even with like really sophisticated models, tons of data, software performance can be, well, unpredictable.
Yeah.
There's just this inherent uncertainty that we have to deal with.
Okay.
And the researchers here, they break it down into two main types of uncertainty, and those are aleatoric and epistemic.
Okay, so I'm going to need you to break those down for me in English, please.
Sure, sure. So think of aleatoric uncertainty, kind of like the noise that you get in any real-world system. Mm-hmm. It's like when you're trying to time something with a stopwatch.
Right.
No matter how precise that stopwatch is, it's always going to be a little bit off.
Yeah.
And you can minimize those errors, but you can never completely eliminate them.
So it's about like the limits of measurement itself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's aleatoric. Now, epistemic uncertainty, that's different. It's more about the model's limitations, our own understanding of how the system works.
Okay.
Think of it like a weather forecast. Even if you could account for every single thing that affects the weather, there would still be some level of uncertainty.
Right, right. Like, we'll never be able to predict everything with 100% accuracy.
Exactly. And the thing is, this isn't just some abstract academic idea. It really does have big implications for how software is designed, how it's used, and even how we think about its limits.
So let's talk about that. Why does any of this matter? For like the average person who uses software every day, what's the takeaway here?
Well, think about it like battery life on your phone. If you understand how all those different settings actually impact performance, and then, you know, how much uncertainty is really baked in, could make a huge difference in how long your battery actually lasts.
Okay, now you're speaking my language. I am all about squeezing out those extra few hours of battery life.
Right. Or like think about when you're trying to optimize like a video game to run really well.
Okay. Yeah.
You can, you know, tweak all the graphic settings, try to get the best frame rate. But if you don't actually know how much uncertainty is involved in all those different settings, you might actually be sacrificing stability. You might even accidentally introduce some, like, game-breaking bugs or something.
Yeah, nobody wants that. So how do we, like, bridge that gap? From just acknowledging that software can be kind of unpredictable to, like, actually getting a handle on it, on that uncertainty. That's where this P4 system comes in.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So P4, it uses this really cool approach where instead of trying to ignore all that uncertainty, it just, like, embraces it.
Okay.
It uses this thing called Bayesian inference, which sounds super complicated.
It does sound kind of complicated.
It is, kind of. But essentially, it's a way for this system to constantly update its predictions based on any new evidence that it gets.
So it's not like static. It's not just giving you a single number and saying, that's it. It's constantly learning and refining its understanding.
Exactly. So like, for example, you know those navigation apps that you can use?
Yeah.
They predict when you're going to arrive somewhere. As you're driving, the app is gathering all this new info, right?
Right, like traffic.
Traffic, yeah, road closures, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then it uses that to update its prediction and give you a better estimate of when you're actually going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So P4, it does something very similar, but with software performance.
Okay, so instead of just blindly trusting that one initial prediction, we get these like confidence intervals, right? Like a range of possibilities.
Yeah, exactly. And that is super powerful because it lets you make much more informed decisions.
Yeah.
You can look at all these different settings and prioritize the ones that, you know, are probably going to be high performing, but also have a high degree of certainty.
Right.
So you're minimizing the risk of, you know, any nasty surprises.
So it's kind of like, you know, choosing the settings that have like the best odds of actually working the way you expect them to. So let's, I want to dig into a little bit how P4 actually works. The paper mentions things like data pre-processing and model composition and prior estimation. It sounds very complicated.
Yeah, it is a multi-step process,
but
we can break it down. Think of it like baking a cake.
Okay.
You know, you wouldn't just take all your ingredients, chuck them in a bowl, and just hope for the best.
Definitely not. I have learned that the hard way many times.
Exactly. So first, what P4 does is it cleans up the data and gets it ready, just like, you know, carefully measuring out all your ingredients.
Okay.
And then it has to build a model, which is basically like a recipe for performance. Mm-hmm. It's based on all the factors that are most likely to affect how the software is going to run.
So like, figuring out which ingredients actually have the biggest impact on how the final cake's going to taste.
Exactly. Then there's prior estimation, which is kind of like, it's like giving the model some initial assumptions to work with, like saying, okay, we're making a chocolate cake here, so we're probably going to need some cocoa powder.
Yeah.
It just gives it a starting point.
Right. And then the Bayesian inference comes in and it kind of acts like, you know, you're baking and you're keeping an eye on the oven and you're like, oh, well, maybe I need to adjust the temperature a little bit or maybe I need to add a little bit more of this ingredient. It's constantly tweaking the recipe as it goes.
Yes, that is a great way to put it. It lets P4 like refine its predictions as it's going, as it encounters more data.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a really good baker would adjust like the baking time based on how the cake is rising.
So we've got our cake in the oven. We're like anxiously watching through the oven door. Did it actually work? Did they like actually put this to the test, this P4 system in the real world?
Yeah, they did. They really put it through the ringer.
Okay.
They tested it on 13 different software systems. And these weren't like theoretical things. These were real world systems. Things like video encoders and database management systems, stuff like that.
Okay, cool. So real deal software. What'd they find?
Well, the results were promising, but here's where it gets kind of crazy.
Okay.
They found that sometimes adding more data to train the models actually made the predictions worse.
Wait, really? That seems so counterintuitive. Like, you would think the more information you have, the more accurate your predictions are going to get. It's like saying the more you learn about baking, the less confident you become in making a cake.
That's a really good point. And it just shows you like how complex this whole thing really is.
Right.
Sometimes you add more data and you're really just adding more complexity, right?
Right.
You have all these new variables to consider and that can actually make the uncertainty even greater.
Okay. So can you like give me a concrete example of that? How could having more data actually make things less predictable, especially when it comes to like software?
Sure. Yeah. So let's say you're like trying to optimize a video game.
Okay.
You want to make it run as smooth as possible.
Right.
So you start collecting all this data on, you know, the frame rates that people are getting with different graphics settings and different hardware.
Right.
And at first, more data is good, right? Like the model starts to identify trends and it sees like, okay, this setting tends to affect performance this way.
Right. You start to see the patterns.
Exactly. But then let's say you start getting data from players who are, you know, really into modding their games.
Okay.
So they're like messing with the game's code itself. And
oh, yeah. So you're introducing all these new variables that you hadn't even accounted for.
Exactly. All of a sudden, the model's hit with all this data that just doesn't fit with the patterns that it thought it had identified.
Right.
It's like adding, I don't know, like chili powder to your cake batter.
Right.
You might end up with something really unexpected.
Yeah. So more data isn't always better.
Not necessarily, no. And that's why, you know, we were talking about earlier about P4 being able to measure uncertainty. That's so important.
Okay.
It helps us to, like, identify those unreliable options, you know,
okay,
those settings or those variables that even when you have lots of data, they still tend to throw the predictions way off.
Okay. So let's bring it all back around for our listeners. Why should, like, the average person care about these, like, unreliable options?
Because it can help you make much smarter decisions about how you use software. You know,
okay.
It's about knowing which settings you can probably trust, which ones are more likely to behave predictably,
okay,
and which ones might actually have like unexpected consequences.
So it's about, like, instead of just, like, randomly changing settings and hoping for the best, it's about actually understanding what might happen and, like, making a more informed choice.
Exactly. Imagine if you could look at all the settings on your phone.
Yeah.
And you knew which ones were, like, crucial for performance and you shouldn't really mess with. And then which ones you could safely adjust, you know, maybe save some battery life.
Mm-hmm.
Or keep your phone from, like, heating up so much.
Yeah.
That's the kind of, like, control that I think we could have someday.
It all comes down to just acknowledging that, like, software, it's not perfect, right? There's always going to be that element of uncertainty.
Exactly. And once we, like, embrace that, then we can actually start designing better software, we can use it better, and we can even optimize it in a much more intelligent way.
We're not trying to fight against the randomness. We're working with it.
Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive. I always love, like, geeking out about this stuff.
Me too.
Thank you so much for coming on and talking about this with me.
Yeah, this was fun.
And to all our listeners, thank you, as always, for joining us for this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.